are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my X and O work at Inside the Pylon, follow my draft and fantasy work over at BreakingFootball.com, follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation, and he also covers the draft for NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, it's going to be a fun episode. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm so excited for this episode. Every day is a good day, of course. Always important to say. But I love it when we do Twitter mailbags, man. It's a lot of fun to get the silly questions and also the ones that the people want answered. It's a good time.
And before we get to that, I want to remind you that yesterday we had our Locked On Raiders crossover. So if you're looking for some preview stuff, go back and listen to that show. We had the great Bill Williamson on. He talked with Ben about this matchup. What we're going to do first, before we get to the Twitter mailbag, is pick a prospect. We are going to take a look at draft-eligible prospects through the lens of the Eagles draft and try to find some fits for us. Ben, do you mind if I go first? Because I got a prospect that I really like.
No, do the thing, man. I know who you're talking about, and he's exciting.
With so much uncertainty surrounding the linebacker position entering this offseason, and really even the guy you know who's going to be back, Jordan Hicks, as good as he is, he's been banged up his entire college and pro career, so at the very least, depth needs to be addressed, and this season should have proven that to the Eagles brass, especially this last week or so. We've already talked about first-round talent Roquan Smith, the linebacker from Georgia, who I mocked to the Eagles for LockedOnEagles.com recently. Go check out that article. We have also talked about Josie Jewell from Iowa, who I think could be a nice depth piece. Let's talk about a guy that we hinted at the last time we talked. Let's dig into Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech. First off, built like a missile, 6'4", 250. He doesn't possess quite the athletic profile of a Roquan Smith, but he moves really well for his size. He's violent with his hands. He can set an edge. You can play him in all three linebacker spots. Dude has a motor, knows for the ball, can stack and shed, processes well in coverage, and plays his keys. His eval for me seems like it's going to be super easy, probably one of the more fun ones to do. He's a first round talent that's going to give you an instant three down impact on your defense. As a sophomore, he was credited with over 100 tackles, 4.5 sacks, 18.5 tackles per a loss. So he's not one of those guys that's racking up tackles 6 to 7 yards down the field. Over 100 tackles again this year with 14 tackles for loss, 5.5 sacks. Edmonds is all over the field for the Hokies. Like I mentioned last time, he's got NFL bloodlines. His dad was a two-time Pro Bowl tight end. He played ball in the league for 7 years. He doesn't turn 22 until 3 months into the 2018 NFL regular season, so he's a young buck, too. Ben, I love Edmonds, man. What about you?
Yeah, Edmonds, very fun player. We're not exactly talking about him as much as a round one linebacker prospect, not because of the lack of talent, I think, but simply because it's very unlikely that he declares. I mean, now Edmonds' situation, as far as his possible declaration goes, is a little bit interesting because I believe he has a brother who plays with him on the Hokies, right? And so because they could potentially come out together, you know, they could want to both, you know, leave the school at the same time, enter the NFL at the same time, then perhaps Edmonds declares early. Of course, he has to wait to see what he hears from the committee, right? Draft prospects, they can submit three or four of their own games to a committee in college football who evaluates them and gives them a guesstimate as to what round they may be selected in. And if he gets, you know, a good grade from that committee, then there's a good chance that he does declare with his brother. So we'll see what happens there with Tremaine Edmonds. But yeah, you don't find linebackers of his size with his speed and quickness every day. They don't grow on trees, people. So Edmonds is definitely a special talent. And honestly, you know, we said we were going to focus linebackers and safeties for this one. Speaking of guys who are big, they got great frames, but they still have excellent quickness. My guy, going to the Big 12, talking safeties here, Deshaun Elliott out of Texas. All right, he's 6'2", 210, but he can move. He can really move. And what helps him, actually, I don't think he's the speediest guy. I don't think he's going to have a great 40. What changes the game for Elliott is instincts, right? And that's the most important thing for me when I'm evaluating a safety. My number one thing that I look for as a safety, it's my highest proportion of the tape grade, is his instincts on tape. When he sees it, how quick is he to close? And how does he see it as well? How does he piece it together in his head? Does he clearly have some film work behind his game where he anticipates, you know, certain plays and certain situations? Does he trust his instincts too? A lot of the times, for example, Isaiah Oliver, corner out of Colorado, I think he has great instincts. He doesn't trust them enough. Sometimes he hesitates. Deshaun Elliott, you don't see that. Deshaun Elliott will see it and he'll take it. And sometimes he takes the cheat. Sometimes he bites. You know, that's the reality of an instinctual player. That's the double-edged sword. But great yeah. instincts. Really, really quick mental processor for Deshaun Elliott. And the nice thing about having that frame, and then he's got that quickness as well to play man coverage, is that, you know, we talked about Malcolm Jenkins playing up in the box a lot and how you're leaving Rodney McLeod in the single high. I wouldn't want to put Deshaun Elliott as a single high safety, right? I don't think he'd be a solution, a guy to take over McLeod. Shoes, you know, he'll take the McLeod role. Jenkins will continue doing what he does. I think Elliott is very much a chess piece in the way that Malcolm Jenkins is. I think you can play Elliott near the line of scrimmage because he's got great size to cover tight ends against 6'2", 210. I think he's fantastic filling against the run, so I'd like for him to be up as an overhang defender within 8 yards of the line of scrimmage, within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, up at the line of scrimmage, pressing against slot receivers, against tight ends when they're flexed out into the slot, because he has that physical frame, he has that physical nature to his game, right? So all of these things very positive. He's a move piece on the defensive back end in the same way that Malcolm Jenkins is a move piece. Throw in the fact that he's leading FBS in interceptions, I believe. He has like 7 or 8 or something. 6 interceptions this year, 6. He's a Jim Thorpe finalist, which means he's a finalist for one of the top defensive backs in football. I'm not sure if that award's been given out yet. It probably was given to Minkah Fitzpatrick, but he was at least a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. He's a unanimous first team All-American as well. He's got a lot of accolades, declaring early as a junior. Deshaun Elliott, very talented Longhorn. He's a great defender. And I've heard some round one hype for him. I'm not sold on that just yet, solely because he had a very productive 2017, but 2016 and 2015 weren't really so much there, which gives me some pause. You know, interceptions worry me as a stat in general. You know, very often they can be a little bit aberrative, and so you want to be careful with that. And then also, I do think he isn't fast. I do think I shouldn't say he isn't fast. He's kind of slow. Like, he's not the quickest. He's not the speediest guy on the face of the planet. You know, you don't want to say he isn't fast like that. He could be faster. And so I think that will limit his ability to play single high, which will make him more so a box safety, a strong safety type. And that lack of versatility will, I think, sully his draft prospect a little bit. However, that being said, when you have instincts like he does, he acquits himself well in single high. So we'll see. I'm not sold on him as round one yet. I've heard that. I would think more early day two for Deshaun Elliott.
It was, in fact, Minkah Fitzpatrick that edged out both him and, Josh Jackson from Iowa for the Jim Thorpe Award. So, yeah, I mean, that's good talent to be in company with. So, okay, Ben, we opened up the Twitter mailbag. What did we find from our lovely, lovely listeners?
We found some good stuff. Let's start with one of our most common listeners, one of our most frequent askers whenever we open things up to Twitter, and that's Mr. McGibless. Mr. McGibless is the man. He constantly interacts with us on Twitter. And so he was having a conversation with somebody, I think you were involved with him, like, about Big V, and I know you have a stat regarding Halepulu Vaitai that is that's less than favorable. It's not great.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing. And I saw him talking with Jimmy Kemsky, friend of the podcast. We've had him on a couple of times. Great dude. And he was talking about Big V letting up the most pressures in the past 5 weeks. And Jimmy was like, that can't be true. That doesn't sound right. So I looked it up. And my response to it was, pressures are subjective, but according to PFF, over the last 5 games, Big V has allowed 28 pressures on 217 pass block snaps, most pressures by 4. Second most sacks allowed with 5, ranks 55 out of 55 for pass blocking efficiency of tackles that have played at least 50% of the snaps over the last 5 games. That's bad, Ben. That's real bad.
It's very bad. Yeah, that is less than ideal. Again, the technical term, less than ideal. So McGiblets asked, solution, what do you guys foresee happening? Is this a free agency situation or is this a draft situation? Looking at the potential free agents, it's not great. I don't think that free agency will be the move, especially for a Philadelphia team that has given out a lot of contracts recently. They're not going to have the most cap space left in the NFL, and they'd like to get younger, I think, in my opinion. I think that building through the draft, kind of the cornerstones of the franchise in place, now it's built through the draft, get cheap depth, that sort of thing. If you're looking at free agents as far as tackles go, the biggest fish is going to be Nate Solder out of New England. He's really the only big name that pops out to me as potentially going somewhere. I would assume New England would try to retain him. Obviously, he's a big money sort of a guy. He's making over $10 million this year. Besides that, I mean, you've got Eric Winston out of Cincy. He's going to be done with his rookie contract. Same thing with Bradley Sowell out of Chicago. These are two guys who are pretty solid. I would assume that they would be retained by their respective teams. I see a reason why they would leave. And then you got guys like Michael Schofield, Central Henderson, who else? Earl Watford. These are guys who've been around for a while. Maybe their veteran depth you bring in. Obviously, Will Beattie is another one on Philadelphia currently, who maybe you bring them in as a as a tie over, as a help. Alan Barber, actually, up in Denver, he's going to be done with his contract. Maybe he comes back to Philly. But I don't think that the starting right tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles is in this free agent class. And right. I don't think Philadelphia sees it that way. I don't know about you. I'm expecting the draft.
Yeah, I'm definitely expecting the draft too at some point, whether it's a first round pick or we make some trades and move up again or whatever is there. I think we definitely at least go to the well a couple of times as far as the offensive line in the offseason. We absolutely need to. Ben, next question. What do we got?
Next up comes from at the Joe Marino, one of my bosses over at NDT Scouting, who, all right, this is an important one. We're going to take some time on this one, Mike. Solak is on record as saying cilantro is the lettuce of Satan and should not defile any edible substance. I need to know if Kiss agrees with this nonsense. Mike, before you get it, let me make something very clear. Cilantro was sent by Lucifer, the fallen angel, to ruin food for mankind. It was like, man, Lucifer was sitting down there in the darkest, deepest pits of Hades, and he saw that we had invented like burritos and tacos and other delicious, usually like, you know, Mexican sort of ethnic foods. And he said, wow, humans can't be that happy. Let me convince some people that cilantro actually tastes good, and then they'll try to spread this disgusting substance across the nation. I am one of the few of the resistance, one of the leaders. Cilantro sucks. It overtakes everything that is on. It does not taste good. Other herbs and spices, far more palatable. That's the end of the story. How do you feel about cilantro?
Well, I'm going to couple this in with something that you said as well. You said to Joe that he doesn't like onions of any variety or preparation, so the entirety...
Yeah, so we can't be trusting anything this man says, all right? There's a chance that he's a spy for the commies. If he doesn't like onions and he likes cilantro, the only reasonable thing to assume here is that he's from the Soviet Union. I'm just sorry. That's it. He works for Hydra.
For me, onions, okay, so let's say you have a cheesesteak or a fine meal, whatever you might use onions with. Before you put the onions on it, you're Marcus Aurelius. When you put the onions on whatever that is, you're suddenly Commodus. And just like with Commodus, you should be choked out in a bathtub by a wrestler, and then you should be fictionalized in a movie where you're played by Joaquin Phoenix and killed by Russell Crowe in the arena. I hate onions, dude. I can't stand them. I don't like cilantro. I think it tastes like dish soap. All of that stuff is bad to me. You guys are eating some awful stuff.
What is it like, Michael, to be a pagan? I'm just curious. What is it like to just spit in the face of everything that is natural and good and holy in the world? You don't like, all right, I can understand, like, onions have a slightly bitter taste. I love onions. I'll eat an onion raw. I don't care. But I can understand if you say, all right, they're bitter. I don't like the taste. It's a strong taste, whatever. But when you have a fried onion, a caramelized onion, oh my gosh, it melts in your mouth and improves everything. I don't want to hear it. I'm just curious. What is it like to be a pagan?
Dude, I can't do onions. I can't do cilantro. I can't do cinnamon. Cinnamon's awful to me as well.
That's what a coincidence. I can't do this podcast anymore. Logging off the last time, Benjamin Solak. Goodbye.
Okay, let's get past this. I don't know if you can ever, but let's go to the next question, Ben.
All right, next up is coming from my man. It says Dion Ulis, which is a very good Christmas name, but that's at Ryan Kieran, underscore in between. Kieran is K-E-I-R-A-N. Of the teams still in playoff contention, what's the ideal path to get out of the NFC in your opinion? I don't know if I want to see the Panthers again. You know what I mean? I feel like when we saw the Panthers, they were just starting to figure out, you know, that kind of process of, oh snap, we've got a good running back and another good running back. If we put them on the field at the same time and we do weird stuff with them, no one's going to be able to figure out what we're doing. Like, I feel like I want to avoid the Panthers if they get in. On the flip side, this is a Falcons team, in my opinion, that's out-punching their weight in the sense that they still are confused by the fact that Julio Jones is on their team, it would appear. They're still a little bit, you know, perplexed by having a top three, top five offensive weapon in the league playing wide receiver for them, and they don't use him enough. They're getting better at it, but I don't trust Steve Sarkisian operating that offense whatsoever. And then the Falcons defense is a very small, very fast defense, right? Which that works well in a lot of different situations, but Philadelphia's got one of the most athletic offensive lines in the NFL, so I think they would be able to work against this Falcons defensive front well. So I like seeing the Falcons in the first round. If the Falcons get in as a wild card, they'll probably be hot, which you got to worry about, but I think that you can go ahead and you can beat the Falcons. And then I agree with you, I do not want to see Minnesota at all in the conference championship. That's the team that scares me the most from the beginning. Los Angeles is a team, again, we've already played them. It's tough to beat a team twice. They did just lose Greg Zuerlein, so if they have a kicking problem, I'll see the Rams in a tough game. That sounds good to me. But the Saints are still the one I'm taking. I do think, you know, that defense, again, playing better than I thought it would, and then it's starting to incur some injury now, right? And it's getting back healthy, but as the season goes on and on, your percentage goes down, right? Your Gatorade meter on NBA 2K just goes down. You don't have as much energy. So I think that defense getting beat up a little bit. So for me, it goes Falcons Saints. I like how we're focusing on the NFC South, though. That's interesting. Next up for me, I feel like this one's more aimed to you, but we'll ask it anyway. Bryce Rossler, who's a dude, BT Rossler on Twitter. If you could conduct a one-hour interview with either Coach Mike Leach, or Coach Lane Kiffin, who would it be and why?
Oh, dude, it's 100% Mike Leach. I mean,
of course it is.
Just recently, I shared with you the news footage of him being a weatherman, which is mind-blowingly awesome. One of the quotes is, you're not going to live for 100 years, go live dangerously, talking about what weather, in which weather you should go outside and enjoy. It doesn't matter to him, man. He's a crazy person. I freaking love Mike Leach. I would play his speech after the Baylor game where he just goes off for 7 minutes every morning. Like, that's how I want to wake up. I would get an apartment with Mike Leach, and I think I might ask him on Twitter to get an apartment with me tonight. So be on the lookout for that.
If only to be contrarian, I'll take Kiffin. Firstly, I would spend like 55 minutes of them talking about X's and O's because Lane Kiffin runs one of the coolest offenses ever, and he has for many, many years. He's always on the cutting edge of stuff. But also, Lane Kiffin just does very, very silly, crazy, sometimes borderline not okay things. The nice thing about Kiffin is that a lot of coaches very much fear social media. Kiffin embraces it. A lot of coaches, you know, feel the need to be politically correct. Not politically correct isn't the right way of saying it. They feel the need to like blatantly lie in the sense that like, you know, they don't like other coaches, you know, they don't like other programs, you know, they're pissed, but they kind of pretend that they aren't for the sake of like, you know, standing on principle or whatever. Kiffin just goes at it. Like, Kiffin just embraces social media, embraces the fact that he's a character, that he's kind of a meme, and he just rolls with it. And I love that about him. Kiffin was up by 31 against Akron in a bowl game. So it's not like he has games later to play, and so he's going to practice. He went for two up by 31 in a bowl game. Right? And he was asked why, and he said because an Akron football official was talking smack before the game, and he was pissed off, so he went for two.
Like, nice.
Just unapologetic, just in your face. I think that's awesome. I love that sort of nonsense. All right, next up, this one is for Mike. It's written out there. Michael Peterson at Chargers Lately. If you could eat only tacos or pizza for the rest of your life, which would you choose?
That's a really tough one, man. That's like, that kind of like defines who you are as a person, at least on food Twitter. I'm going to go with tacos. I feel like you can do more with tacos than you can with pizza. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I thought of it the other direction. Like, you can put way more, like, there are way more different varieties of pizza than there are varieties of tacos, I think.
Yeah, but are they good?
Yeah, but if you're stuck with them for the rest of your life, I would be going for variety. Like, I'd be, like, making sure that I could, like, taste different things, you know?
Are you one of those weirdos that put, like, pineapples on your pizza?
Oh, absolutely. Pineapple on pizza is delicious.
Only with ham, though. Do you put pineapple with anything else?
I don't think, I've had pineapple plain. I've definitely had pineapple with ham. Hawaiian pizza is the move. I can't think of anything else, but I love pineapples. Fantastic fruit.
Pineapple plain on a pizza. Yeah, and you're going to judge me for not liking onions, Ben.
I'll put pineapples and onions on a pizza. I've done that before for sure.
Oh, dude, what? They're totally two different. What are you doing with your life?
If you have grilled onions? No, they're not. They're both sweet, Michael.
Oh, grilled onions. Come on, man. Stop it. It permeates the entire pizza.
Next up, Austin Siebert, at Abert 43. This is a good question. What is a slant route?
It is something that I am diving deep into for LockedOnEagles.com. Keep an eye out for that. I looked at every single slant or variation of a slant that the Giants ran. I think I ended up with about 20 clips. I'm deciding which ones they're going to hit the editing room floor and which ones to use because there's just so many of them. But a slant is a route that the Eagles were entirely unprepared to deal with, despite the fact that everyone knows that the Giants' offense runs through the slant. So that is a slant route.
A slant route is a sad thing that took us over on Sunday, but we survived. Next up, Josh Chiramata on Twitter. This one's more of a he had two. He had like one question, one take. The take is Chicago beef greater than Philly cheesesteak, which as somebody who has spent a lot of time in Philadelphia and currently lives in Chicago, nope. Next up,
Troll.
How does Schwartz need to recalibrate the coverage after washed Eli and the practice squad all-stars shredded them and cilantro is delicious. Okay, cilantro, garbage, already established. How does Schwartz need to recalibrate the coverage? Well, assuming Oakland tries to run things in a similar way, which if you go back to the Wednesday pod, as Bill Williamson told us, Carr releases the football very quickly, but the offense isn't designed for that. Unlike the Giants offense, where Eli wants to get the ball out as fast as possible, the Oakland brass is upset with Carr because of how quickly he gets the ball out. They want him to stay in the pocket longer and go through his progressions before hitting his check down immediately. And so I don't think it'll attack us in similar ways. The recalibration that you saw in the Giants game, which was able to stop the Giants attack after they were very successful, was using more cover two looks, which allows you to let your corners play the flat. They don't have to worry about what's behind them. They're more willing to jump on those slant routes, and they don't have to be as concerned. That's what you saw. Now, Philadelphia wasn't able to play cover two for the entirety of the game because of the issues with the linebacker depth that we've discussed. Malcolm Jenkins had to come down. They tried to put Corey Graham up there as the other half covers there in cover two, and Corey Graham struggled because he's not that good. So that's the recalibration you have to make. I think you'll look to see likely more pattern matching in the short zones, which they did with some success against the Giants, but not too much. I think they'll drill that a lot more in the week because pattern matching in the short areas really lets you get a jump on routes. It forces the quarterback to hold the football longer, which we know Carr is uncomfortable doing, and he has to go through his progressions, make more reads. It's a tougher mental process for the quarterback. It's tougher on the secondary as well, so they got to make sure they have it tight, otherwise you're going to blow it and give up a big play.
Yeah, and here's where I take my issue with PFF. It's their grading system. I love everything else they do. Their grading system, 4 out of 5 of their top 5 Eagles performers were on defense. One of them was Corey Graham, and I'm thinking, whoever graded this game does not understand coverage, because Corey Graham was not good in that game. So I definitely took issue with that. And how do you allow 500 and end up with, I mean, I get Fletcher Cox, he had a decent game, but geez, man, outside of that, what are you really looking at as far as the top 5 performance when Nick Foles isn't in there and Dak Prescott throws 0 touchdowns and 2 interceptions and is graded higher than Nick Foles by a significant margin? So I took a little bit of an issue with that, but that's something I might get into with an article for Locked On Eagles as well if I get some time.
Yep. And that was it for our Twitter mailbag. Thank you so much, people. Always appreciate you dropping those questions down. It's a fun thing to do. Remember, it is an open door policy here at Locked On Eagles, however, so I'm on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's Solak. Mike is on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's KIST. If you ever have any questions, something you'd like to hear discussed, a take that you want us to potentially break down, go ahead, hit us up on Twitter. If you're going to leave a review, you can put that in there as well. And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, Locked On Eagles, on whatever podcast app you're listening to. We only accept 5-star reviews, so those exclusively, but we appreciate it whenever you guys rate and review. We're almost up, I think we're above 60 now on iTunes, which is great. The more we get, the more traffic we get, the more stuff we can produce for you guys. Written content, as always, on LockedOnEagles.com. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Friday, we're potentially bringing up a guest. We got to make sure we have everything squared away. Don't want to promise y'all something we don't have. Monday, we are previewing the Christmas Day, Raiders versus Eagles. Going to be a fun one, Mike.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.